This is the Horse Radio Network.
What a beautiful day for horses in the morning.
You are listening to the number one horse podcast in the world. Here's your entertaining look at the horse world and the people in it.
Well, good morning, everybody. I am Glenn the Geek in Ocala, Florida.
And I am Stacy Westfall from Perrysville, Ohio.
And you're listening to the Stacy Westfall episode of Horses in the Morning on the Horse Radio Network for January the 7th. This episode is brought to you by Equithrive. Good morning, horse world. That's right. Stacy is in the house today. Happy New Year, Stacy.
Happy New Year, Glenn.
So have you been furiously planning your schedule for the year, all the expos and all of the competitions and stuff?
Have you been spying on me?
Well, I just know that it's that time of year.
It is. I actually have this impressive set of sticky notes going on. Like, I decided to try a different theory here. And yeah, I've got post-it notes. Oh, geez. I've got 10 lines of sticky notes.
So that's your method. I was going to ask you, do you get the big calendar on the wall where you write in the blocks, or do you use a spreadsheet? Nope, it's sticky note.
Well, it's actually been all of the above. And so I have the calendar that I use for, like, I actually sent Jesse to the store and I was like, can you bring me home 3 calendars? Because I needed one for horse shows and horse events, and then I needed one for kind of business stuff, and then I needed one that I could just put anything I could think of on, and then I needed to somehow lay them all out. I'm taking over the whole house with post-it notes and calendars. And then I have a Google spreadsheet thing that it's supposed to all go into as I decide on it, but, you know, it's only the 7th, so I'm not that far in.
Well, we want to welcome everybody. It is the Stacy Westfall episode. She is here the first Tuesday of every month. And if you want to catch past episodes of Stacy, you can go back to Horses in the Morning, scroll down to the middle of the page, and you'll see her little banner there. Click on it and brings you to all the past episodes. As well as she has her own podcast, you can find it at stacywestfall.com. So that is the story. You can also call in and ask Stacy any horse questions today. We're going to be taking calls from now until about 11 o'clock, and you can give us a call at 435-272-1997. And that phone number is on the live player, as well as the website at horsesinthemorning.com. So you've been on some adventures in the last month, and I don't know anything about this. All I have is Mr. Robot here. Now, there's a show called Mr. Robot, which I watch, but is that what it's about?
I do not know the show Mr. Robot. Now you have to give me a short synopsis of this.
You have to. It's a hacker show, so you have to watch it. Okay.
It's a hacker show. Yep. Okay. Well, Mr. Robot. Before Christmas, I posted on my Facebook page that I'd asked Santa for a mini horse, a miniature horse, but I also did a backup plan.
We talked about that on the show that you asked.
Yeah, so I asked for mini, but then I asked as a backup, do you do backups for your Santa wishes? Like, you have your number one wish, but then you're like,
didn't we put 30 things down hoping to get some of them? Yeah.
You're like your number one, but you got to rank them. They've got to go in order. So I did, my backup was a Roomba or an iRobot or one of the little automatic vacuums.
Okay.
And so I had to, so for Christmas, I got this little robot that vacuums my house. And it comes with an app. So mine's an iRobot. And so it comes with an app, and you're supposed to name your robot.
Okay.
And so my robot went unnamed for a while, and it would just, you know, but anyway, I named it Mr. Robot, not super creative.
Yeah,
but
really
Stacey. Yeah. So, like, instead of it being iRobot, it's Mr. Robot. But, you know, it was, yeah, anyway. But Mr. Robot is supposed to come out and vacuum at 10 a.m. every morning. And I thankfully remembered to tell Mr. Robot to take a break today. Because otherwise, like, right after you'd been like, welcome, it would have been like, do-do-do-do, and he just takes off and starts cleaning the house.
And does he do a good job?
I am shocked at what a good job this little robot does. And I'm going to make a confession here So it takes off. It, you know, it's probably only maybe 3 inches tall. And it's like a little bit bigger than a dinner plate size around. And so it's not super big, which is really funny because now you don't save any time, by the way, by having one of these because you want to watch it. Like you just want to like watch how it goes because it kind of goes and it bounces off the walls and it turns and you're trying to figure out like how this thing is thinking and finding its way around the room. And you can find hysterical videos online with cats riding on top of these things.
Yes.
And the first thing on that Christmas, on that post when I said I really want a mini, but if my backup plan is a vacuum that will clean the house on its own. And the first comment on there was a man who said, this could happen to you. He said, beware of your cats turning it on and off. And I said, I need to see a video. And within 2 minutes, he had a video on there of his cats jumping onto it. Well, when they jump on it, it tells it to turn. And so I was like, oh my gosh, if you have time to Google cats and vacuum robots, it's really funny.
Don't Google Roomba and dog accident.
Oh, that was the biggest comment underneath that whole thread. Yes. On Facebook was
that's my biggest fear. That's why we don't have one.
Yeah. Yeah. So my only inside pet is a bird in a cage who throws seeds everywhere. So it's working for me.
Yeah, that'd be perfect.
Wow. Yeah.
Well, cool. But congratulations. It's not a mini.
It's not a mini. No. And that's what I actually Googled mini horse names. So I could rename Mr. Robot if a listener has a really good miniature horse name that would cross over well for a vacuum cleaner.
Okay. There you go.
You know, like Thumbelina works for a mini, but it doesn't really work for the vacuum. I need a crossover name. But yes, actually, to actually give the actual review on it, it really does work really well because my house isn't very big and you just going in and out to the barn all the time. You just have that little bit. It's like we're good about taking off the boots and doing all that stuff, but there's just that little bit of grit, that little bit of dust that wants to come in.
You live in Florida, you have sand. You just have sand everywhere. I don't care if you take off your shoes or not. The sand and little tiny oak leaves everywhere.
Yeah, so we're similar to that, like because I paid for a beach to be hauled into my indoor and then we walk up from the house. Like there's a sand path at this point from my indoor up to my door, which therefore comes into the house. But yeah, Mr. Robot is excellent at that. But I didn't realize how dirty underneath my king size bed must be until Mr. Robot took a trip under there and he came out and it looked like he needed a bath on his top side because apparently there must be like a master colony of like dust bunnies and cobwebs. And Mr. Robot comes out from underneath the bed and it's got like the little, you know, the little, whatever that thing around the bed cover thing that hangs down. Yeah. So like he pops out underneath the little bed shimmy thing and he's covered with, I was like, ooh, Mr. Robot. Nobody's cleaned under there since we built 3 years ago.
Nobody looks under the bed. Hey, I want to also congratulate you on winning your bronze medal for the United States Dressage Federation.
Oh, it's so funny because now I have it and I hold it and I'm like, wow,
you've won a lot of stuff in your life, but this one seemed to resonate with you.
I think it really did, and I think it's because I remember being the little girl up in Maine, and I remember watching, you know, dressage horses on TV and wanting to do it, and then kind of just being like, well, that's out of reach. And it's funny how sometimes when you make that decision early on, how you forget that like maybe, you know, 20, 30 years somewhere in there, you can like rethink whether or not that's still true. And I think it never occurred to me that I could go down that path. And so I think that's why it really resonated with me because it's almost like shutting that door on something. You don't realize how much you did that until you crack it open. And then you're like, wow, that just happened.
Well, congratulations. That's really cool. And you have episode 60 of your podcast coming out tomorrow. You're having a good week, good month here.
Yeah. This is a good kickoff to the year.
Well, congratulations on that. We have a caller and he's one of our auditors by the name of Rad. Good morning, Rad.
Hey, how are you, Glenn? Happy New Year.
Well, Happy New Year to you too. Now, you live even further north than Stacy, right?
Oh yeah, I'm in northern Wisconsin. It's we have like 3 feet of snow up here.
Oh,
Stacy, he posted a picture of himself riding. I think that was you, right? They posted a picture of riding, and we couldn't.
Yeah,
the snow was up to the horse's belly.
Memories.
Yeah,
memories
of right
me.
So, Rad, what's up? Yeah, what do you have a question for Stacy?
Yes, please. Hey, Stacy, I have a horse that I've been working with for years, and he's just a kind of, I would rather not horse, you know, mm-hmm. he's hard to catch. I taught him how to be caught. You know, I can get over that. He knows that there's a pen to go in before you get to the barn that I can kind of catch him in easier. And he's skeptical about even going in there. And when I ride him, it's just like, we're starting over every time. There's not a lot of bucking or anything horrible like that, but he should be, I'm not a very consistent rider as far as time, but he should be a little farther along than he is. And I'm just wondering, are some horses just like that? Or, is there something I can be doing to make it more fun for him? I went to a bitless bridle, 'cause you know, even hearing the bit clink kind of made him nervous. He's sort of a nervous horse in general. So just wondering, with your behavioral expertise, if there's a way I can make riding more fun for my horse, feeding him afterwards, feeding him before something good like grain.
Yeah. Yeah. That's, it's interesting because I was just, I love analyzing all the different horses out in the barn. And like you just said, it's kind of, to me, when I hear this horse being described, I'm like, yep, I've seen combinations and versions and things very similar to this. And it makes me really curious about, you know, what that horse is experiencing. And I was just, and there's so many different layers, different ways you can look at it, but I'm going to throw just a couple out there so we know what we could be looking at. So like the one horse that I'm riding right now, I was explaining to my husband last night, I said, you know, it's funny because I want to go really slow with him because he just feels like a slower learner who really appreciates going slow. And later on, I'm going to want to do things faster with him, but I can just feel from the experience of training a lot of different horses that if I rush it, he's going to get more reserved, more backed off. He won't engage with me as much. And I want him to engage mm-hmm. with me. And it's really important on some of those horses that are a little bit more reserved. Like they're the ones that almost feel like they want to keep you at arm's length a little bit. Those ones are kind of interesting because they... Sometimes I think on trying to invite them in, I try to explain it when people are at clinics. And it's like, if I put you and the horse in a round pen, and there's a lot of the moves that we make look and feel like us going after them. So imagine you're standing in a round pen with a horse and it's like, I want the horse to go around me. I want the horse to go clockwise around the round pen. So we tend to go sure. after the horse and we apply pressure to the horse. And then, you know, we step back and we, you know, reward, we step back and we take the pressure off. I think it's really interesting to keep you a release of pressure as a cue versus a applying pressure as a cue. And it's kind of just a different way to look at it because you're kind of always applying and releasing to some degree. But I think on some of those horses, it's like, so for example, let's put it into a riding example. So it might be that we're riding the horse and we're asking the horse to go. And it's like, before we ask the horse to stop, we give a really subtle cue and then we wait and we slow down and let the horse make a choice there. Does that make sense? Like you leave a little space yep. in there for that horse. And sometimes those really reserved ones are the ones that need us to slow down a little bit more. And it seems counterintuitive because you're already like, well, geez, they kind of don't want to be caught. They don't want to be this or that. So I find it really interesting to mess with them. And then on those ones that are more reserved or more standoffish, and this one sounds a little bit mm-hmm. funny too, I do a lot of scratching them. I use food rewards for different things, but I do a lot of scratching because... So my little horse Willow that I've been doing a lot of videos and stuff with, she tends to be more skittish, more reserved. She's one of those ones that she'd keep you a little bit at distance. She's not a pocket pony by nature.
Yeah.
And what's really interesting about her is I've noticed as I work on, like, I've been doing, whenever it gets cold, I do a lot of Liberty work because when I'm dressed in layers of Carhartts, I don't ride as well. So I do more groundwork. So when I'm all bundled up, which you might be when you're in 3 feet of snow. So what I'll do is when I stop and I go to give the horse a reward, I walk over. Well, I'm going to have my body relax and I'll talk a little bit silly, not because it necessarily means to them, but I want to drop and I'm going to be good girl. And I scratch with the goal of making the fingertips of my gloves filthy. I want to scratch like crazy, which is kind of funny because that more reserved horse, you almost when you start scratching them, they'll still stand in this really proper way. But if you do this day after day after day, it's really kind of interesting because they get really like, you know, this is kind of cool. Like she's spending excessive amounts of time like scratching me in between these things. And I think you can actually move your rewards become more tied to your emotional state, almost more so than the food does. Because sometimes the food, you can use food, but you got to be careful the food's not getting in the way. So there's not like horse food you. You've got to somehow make sure that that's like that food is helping reward you, not like it's a third entity there. And that's why sometimes
I don't
want
anticipating that either. Sorry to interrupt.
No, good. No, that's perfect. Because what that made me remember is like, so what I do is I'll go scratch her like crazy and then I'll feed her a treat. So I'm interrupting instead of it just being like, get the treat to her mouth as fast as I can. And the weirdest thing is, this is a food motivated little fat quarter horse pony, but she actually is not rushing to take the treat nearly as fast anymore. I might be imagining it. But I think she is getting a big reward from this huge physical scratching that I'm giving her. And she's getting more animated because it's almost like I'm helping. I'm being real loose with my body and scratching and doing all that. And she's more like, huh, maybe this isn't all, you know, and don't get me wrong. I turn around and then I ask her to trot and lope around me. But then when I stop and I go up, I really do that big scratching motion. And I find that that works really well. And then it carries over to my riding. I find it easier to instill a lot of these things in the groundwork phase because I can do those big things. And my rewards are more subtle when I'm on their back usually. And that's okay because by then they've figured me out because of all the hours I've spent down here.
Sure. Even just petting them, I would imagine, is sort of a trigger. Like I'm, for the endorphin release that they'll get being scratched or something like that.
Yeah. And I'm just saying like really go to town on that scratching.
More loving. I've had him for 6 years or something. And, you know, by that time he should be over fearing me and he's great with groundwork. He can do stuff off a 6 foot lead or, you know, in the round pen. I've even done a round pen demo with him. But still, you know, he's just an I'd rather not kind of guy. And if he weren't my pet, I'm just have two horses and they're pets as much as riding tools. I would get rid of him and get on with another horse. But yeah, maybe I'll just love him up a little more and see if that can make him sort of want to be with me all the more.
Yeah. And make sure there's that contrast there because it's not, it's like you can ask him to do something kind of hard, you know, whatever that would be for you and groundwork. And it can be kind of physical so that maybe he starts, you know, whether that's, I kind of like it at some point, they got to go through like something that makes them breathe harder, but it's like so they do some kind of exercise that makes them breathe a little bit harder because they're more likely to let down. It's like if you go for a good run, a lot of times you go out and exercise in some way, you tend to like relax more after that because you've gotten some of that energy out. But then just swing, rock that teeter-totter. I'm always using a teeter-totter example, but don't be afraid to bring up the energy. But then when you bring it back down, instead of it just being like, good boy and pet pet, like really go to town on like scratching and like, and it's funny that you can scratch a horse with a level like 8, 9, 10 intensity of scratching, like something that would actually scare a colt. I'm talking like, it's weird, but you can really build a bridge there and the horse can start to be like, you know, that whole energy thing's not all bad. Sometimes they come at me with and really scratch me. And it's an interesting thing to do.
Yeah,
but thanks for calling in. That's awesome.
Yeah. Thanks so much. Thanks for your time. I appreciate all your knowledge and you're so great with the behavior of stuff. So I just thought I'd take this opportunity. Thank you very much. Thanks, Glenn, for having me on.
All right. Bye, thanks, guys. Rod. Thanks, Rod. Bye. Appreciate it. All right. Yep. Let's take a break right now for one of our title sponsors. If you want to call in and ask Stacy a question, you can do that as well at 435-272-1997 if you're listening live this morning. But in the meantime, we have a sponsor, and that's Equithrive.
Did you know that horses with limited access to pasture also have limited access to vitamin E? Vitamin E plays an important role in the function of your horse's muscles and nerves. Plus, it's also an antioxidant. Horses in training, aging horses, and horses that are recovering from certain health issues often require even more. I recently had a blood test run on 4 of my horses, and the 3 that are in training all tested low for vitamin E. Now I am supplementing them with a pelleted, natural vitamin E from Equithrive. To learn more about vitamin E and Equithrive's products, please visit equithrive.com.
So, Stacy, we had a segment last time where we talked about a video series you did on the trail to Western dressage, and there was a follow-up question, right?
Yes.
So this was the video was called The Trail to the Western Dressage World Show. And there was a follow-up question. Lisa said, for the general horse, would you say it's easier to start with basic dressage training and then move to Western cues, or start with Western reining cues and then move to Western dressage? So this is interesting because I've seen this question pop up a couple of times on Facebook pages. Where do you start with Western dressage? On the English side or the Western side, basically, is the question.
Yes. And so, yeah, I say start where you're at. And
right,
so obviously,
say,
like,
wherever you're at, and that's a good place to start.
And so, but, you know, there, to me, I guess maybe a way to look at it is, it's like, when I read the question for the general horse, you know, I'm thinking general horse is already being ridden around, whether that's, let's just say it's a trail horse. So it hasn't really been aimed at one way or the other. So that's kind of how I read the question. Well, the basic dressage training cues and the basic Western cues, this is almost to me a discussion about where they different, right?
Right.
I mean, because we're going to say that they're mostly the same, but let's say that there's some differences. So the biggest thing I noticed when I took a Western trained horse, like a horse that's already showing in reining, and then I said, let's go back and do dressage training with this horse, the majority of it overlapped really well. And I like running these experiments. And so to prove it, like, I basically took a few dressage lessons and then went to a dressage show with Popcorn, who was the Road to the Horse champion, who did mounted shooting, who had his AQHA ROM in reining. So this horse was already was a very Western influenced horse. And I instantly went in and was able to get, you know, scores hovering in, well, I needed 5 qualifying scores in training, 3 above a 68 because I show in the open, and I got those in my first 6 tests. So the overlap is huge, that the Western's already got the basic dressage in it. But I'll tell you this, the biggest place that they don't naturally overlap but can easily overlap is Western has that emphasis on haunches in, and traditional dressage has that emphasis on shoulder in. And when you move between the two worlds, that to me is the biggest noticeable difference. And what's interesting is that in dressage, traditional dressage, you have shoulder in and you have haunches in. But in the Western world, you have haunches in. Now, speaking from the reining aspect of it, you have there, I can feel shoulder in inside of my spin, but when I lope around, we don't necessarily work on something that is just a different term for shoulder in. But then you look at some of the other things we do with Western horses, like ranch riding or trail class, and we're moving the horse's shoulders and we're moving the hips, but we don't really, there isn't a specific training term for shoulder in. So it's interesting, if I was going to say one of them was missing one thing, I would actually have to call out Western horses missing a little bit of shoulder in. I can find it and see it in horses because that's the way they want to function. So if you watch a horse running circles in a reining pattern, often they are in a slight shoulder because the horse wants to put itself there and the rider's riding on a loose rein. But if you're going to see anything training wise, it's going to be, you know, that little bit more haunch and emphasis. So I don't think for the basic that it matters which way you start. I think that it's kind of interesting to observe, you know, the differences between the two as far as like that little bit of emphasis, but there's so much more the same. There's so much more that is shared in the same. It doesn't really matter which way you start.
Good. And you know, if you've been doing Western reining and you want to get into Western dressage, you're not going to go back and teach English dressage to get into Western dressage. You're not going to put that middle step in there anyway, right? So
right. Yeah. And I think the thing that might not be quite as intuitive is that, like, say you've got a finished reining horse, it is so worth going back and doing the lower level dressage stuff because there is a value to going back. I've said for a very, very long time that when people are like, how did you get your horses to do all the bridleless stuff with all these multiple different horses? I think it is because I live in this cold climate and because of that, I've trained myself to go back to the beginning because of colt starting and because of way too many layers of clothing. I do a lot more groundwork and restarting. That is what I do in January, February. I restart all my older horses. I do this, I go back to the basics. And so if you've got a reining horse that's performing well, don't be like, well, I think because I'm doing really well at this level in reining that I should go enter like third level in Western dressage. Like, just because you look at the hardest maneuver or movement in the dressage test and you think, I think I can do a lead change, go ahead and go back to level one and learn the other lessons, because it's a totally different use of the pen, arena. I mean, can you hear my terms switching back and forth? Mm-hmm. Like, there's a lot to learn when you're going back and forth between the two. So don't look at it like you're doing something less than, or you're being set back by going back and doing an earlier level thing with a horse that might be advanced in a different area.
You know, you're the definition. I'm so glad you host the show here now, because you're the definition of what our mission statement is for the Horse Radio Network. And that's, it's one sentence, uniting the horse world one show at a time. You are doing that individually, English, Western, you know, you're combining the two audiences right there. And that's terrific. It's something that needed to happen. And I think social media has helped it happen over the last number of years.
Yeah. And what's interesting is I actually feel guilt for doing it sometimes. So that's
like you're
kind
betraying
of interesting.
One or the other.
almost like I like people looking at me might think like, what the heck's wrong with her? She can't focus on like one thing for more than like. and I got thinking about it, and I was like, I'm like, seriously, I'm running up against some thought here that's not helping me here. And I'm like, you know what? I am living the dream I had as a little girl. I mean, you take a little girl and you go like, what do you want to do with horses? And they're like, everything.
Yeah, exactly. There you go.
And then later on, they're like, well, you need to pick one. Are you going to do reining or dressage? No, I refuse to accept this now. No, I'm like, no, everything.
And
like,
she drives her minis too. So there.
I love it. Yeah.
Kayla had a question that's kind of related to what you were just talking about. It's, what are some good exercises to help build horses' back end and keep up their muscles during the winter months? And you can do that with groundwork too, right?
Yeah. And I actually just bought one of the books. I'm trying to reach for it. I probably should just stay focused here, but on like Cavalletti training and that kind of stuff. Like, I love using ground poles and different things like that. But so it depends on the level of training for the horse. But so not knowing what level Kayla's horse is at, some of the different things I'm doing.
If she had Grand Prix, it's going to be a different story, but yeah.
But like, so my little rescue horse, I say that he's 16-1 now, but Presto is, you know, he's just been started under saddle in the middle of the summer. I counted it the other day. I'm up to about 45 rides on him. I haven't been very dedicated about doing this regularly. His exercises are more of lunging over poles. I do light riding with him, but he's the one that I've got that urge to do more groundwork with. And I can see that by making him use himself correctly on the lunge line, and poles are a great way to do that, because then I don't feel like I'm nagging him. His body tells him, like, we got to pick up our feet. We got to prepare for this, you know, these different things. And so I do a lot of that with him. With, you know, it depends on your situation, how much, like, I've got an indoor arena. So with my other horses, I'm doing a lot of transitions because I'm doing a lot of, like, oddly, like, I'm back to the basics again. I just said it. So I'm doing like, so almost all the beginning tests that I'm going to do in dressage are going to be A, enter working trot, X, halt, salute, proceed working trot. So I'm doing a lot of walk trot transitions. And that seems like, well, you know, yeah, I'm doing some flying lead changes, but believe it or not, a walk trot transition that's very crisp without the horse, you know, throwing its head up or taking a few walk steps or doing a little jiggy jog before it gets into an actual trot, that's way harder than you'd think. And so I'm not skipping past it and thinking it's all about lead changes. Like, I'm staying back and doing that. But oddly, that push off while keeping a good frame does help build up the horse's back and their back end. Because although I'm not really, I love trail riding, because trail riding is like the ultimate cheating, because they just walk up and down the hills. They have to do a lot with their butt muscles.
They're forced to do it. Yeah.
They're forced to do it. But that first few steps into the trot from the halt, that really can be a muscle building thing when done right. So lots of transitions.
Jennifer keeps reminding me that when I'm out with the carriage, that walking is probably the best exercise for my pony. Trotting is easier. He loves to trot in a carriage because it's easier. You know, it's easier for him to trot than it is to walk pulling the carriage. So probably he gets more exercise actually walking for a long distance.
Yeah. And I think there's a range of motion thing that goes on there too that's really important to notice. You know, because they use themselves differently in the walk than they do the trot. And I notice, have you ever seen horses that want to rush up hills? They want to trot or lunge up the hill. Yep. They're trying to avoid difficulty of a good walk.
That's right. And that's when she reminds me to walk, is when we're going up hills, because he'd rather trot. You know, it's easier.
Avoid the difficulty. Yep.
So I have a couple of questions. Your transitions are wonderful today, because you're leading in me into other listener questions. I don't know which one to take, because I have a couple that relate to this. But let's try Travis. And this was left over from last month. So Travis, we're finally getting to you. I have a little concern about overdoing the disengaging the hind end during training. It seems that it could cause some joint issues if you were working with a horse and doing this on a regular basis over a long period of time. What are your thoughts on this?
Yeah. So, I was also reading the question. I was like, ooh, it goes on to a stifle issue.
Yeah. Well, I think that was a separate question, actually. I think, I don't know. That's a different horse, I think.
Yeah. Well, they could be related, but the disengaging the hind end, I have talked about it. I did an entire podcast on it actually. And I don't really, it's funny because I remember the first time it really publicly came out was when I was at the Road to the Horse and they had disengage as something you were being judged on. And I'm all mic'd up and I have to say, like, I don't typically disengage the horse's hip. And so I taught it to do this for this competition because you asked me to and I get points for it. So here it is. But I don't do it because I think there's a difference. You got to just be aware of, like, disengage versus engage and asking that horse to step up under. And to me, the disengage looks a lot more like a true turn on the forehand. And I have no problem with a turn at the forehand. What I do have a little bit of a problem with is like the full disengage, like at the trot and lope, they start to get a little bit flinging their bodies around. And it can feel very unbalanced if you're a rider that knows. And there's a lot of times when I'm riding a horse that I say, I know a horse's limitations because I've ridden a lot of them. Don't assume all horses know their own limitations. I mean, that's why they will fall down. Younger horses they learn to find their balance by, you know, making mistakes. But I think some of the exercises you have to be careful not to overdo. And that's one of the reasons I don't disengage, because I spend so much time engaging. And so the engaging means that it does mean that they step up underneath themselves, but they don't lose the forward motion, plant onto their front end and do a true, what people would consider a disengage, which is again, another term in a way for a turn on the forehand. And so I preserve a lot of forward motion for a lot of the stuff that we're doing. And even in my sliding stops, I don't want a slight disengage in that. So that's one of the reasons why I don't teach my horse to disengage as a stopping mechanism early on, because I'm going to need the ultimate of engagement for my stop So it would be kind of counterintuitive to first teach them to disengage and then ask them to do something harder. Because whenever possible, I kind of like to stack it so that they learn the slightly harder thing and then the slightly easier thing. Because otherwise, they kind of always want to go to the easy thing.
And that is human and horse nature.
So, it is.
I want to too. So that leads to, let's go back to lunging, because I have a question here on that. Kayla asks, how do you retrain a horse to lunge as an exercise tool? I wanted to work on my older horse's fitness at the trot on the lunge line with an Equibrand or Pessoa rig, but he's been conditioned to think that lunging is purely playtime and his time to get his sillies out. And it's honestly dangerous. Help. He's perfect on the ground, under saddle, and even trotting in hand.
I love that she asked this question.
Yeah, I know, because how many times have we seen this, actually?
Yeah. And, you know, and it's interesting because their horses are so stinking smart. I mean, at some point, somebody said to this horse, when I put you out on the end of the lunge line, this is your time to play and blow off steam. And on the surface, that doesn't seem like a bad thing to say, especially when you go like, because I'd rather have you do it here than when I'm riding you. But at the same time, you get to the point where Kayla is and she's like, I've got this like slightly dangerous monster when I put him out there on the lunge line, because he's like really getting, he's getting bigger and bigger and bigger.
And hooves.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. I was at a dressage show and a lady walked out of the barn and she was like, I'm going to go fly my kite. And she's leading this like 18-hand horse. And I'm like, what? And she says, I'm going to go fly my kite. I mean, lunge my horse. I was like, that might be the funniest phrase I've ever heard. Like, that was awesome. Like, that was awesome. But
not necessarily ideal situation. Yeah.
I just thought it was so funny that she was just like, I'm going to go fly my kite. And I was like, what is she talking about? And so anyway, let me give you just a little bit of insight into what I do with my own horses to give you a path that could have been followed, just so you have an understanding, and then we can talk about your own horse. So I really do, like with my young horses, when I'm starting them, I want to use the groundwork and the lunging to take some of the steam out. It's like a little bit like recess time. I want to get some of that extra energy out. I tend to do mine a little bit more controlled than it sounds like what your horse was doing. So what I'll do is I'll lunge them. Let's just say I have them trot 10 times around me and then lope 10 times around me. And then I do that the other way. And so what I will do with the horses, I work them pretty consistently so that they don't have a big buildup of steam. So if you take a horse that hasn't been worked for a couple of weeks and you take them out, they're way more likely to be explosive than if they've been worked 5 days in a row. So early on, I set it up so that I am stacking things multiple days in a row, so I don't have as many of those blow up type temptations for the horse. And then after they kind of understand this routine and they're kind of get into this routine, we're going out, we're going to trot, we're going to lope. And let's say I want to start mixing in more time off. I won't let them play unless I invite them to play. And this sounds a little funny, but I'm going to go there anyway and say, like, so let's say they've trotted 10 and they've loped 10 both ways. Now I will then after, so they're not like fresh out of the gate. I make them control themselves fresh out of the gate, but then I'll lunge them around there and they're loping. And if I want to invite them to play, I'll kick the dirt at them. Like sand, I've got a sandy arena. I'll kind of kick dirt at them. I'll make like a stomp. I'll go like stomp with my feet and I'll kind of invite them to kind of like squirt forward and play. And it's a great way to find out what mental state they're in. And it actually invites that energy level to go up at a time when they weren't super fresh to begin with, but it also tells me if there's a little more in the tank that I should know about. And I'll invite them up. And if they go up, then I'll let them kind of blow that steam off by running and keeping them out at that distance. And then I'll bring them back down. And it's really kind of interesting because my younger horse, Presto, it's like, I notice, like at first when I would do that with him, he would have little bits of reactions. You know, he'd kind of squirt forward half a lap or whatever. But a lot of times he might squirt forward and then pop out a lead in the hind end, basically become unbalanced during that playtime. Notice I'm never letting him come in close to me. It's not like an invitation to do it like right off when I go to first send him out there where he could kick my head off. Like, but he's going around there. But now I'm noticing two things. He's way more imbalanced at speed, which I would much rather have him figure out without me on his back. And so he's not popping out a lead. He's not doing that. And it's funny, he doesn't take me up on the invitation to play nearly as often either. Because it's play slash work, because it was like I let it come out, but I don't stop until it comes back down. So it's kind of couched between the controlled beginning, the invitation to play, and then the controlled ending. And I do that forever. Like, it's really funny. Like, I can take a horse out that I've just shown, and I can take them out and invite them. And if they're fresh and full of themselves, they'll play even though they were totally in control to show. Like, it's just this invitation to play has become part of the deal. And if they don't take up the invitation because they're kind of tired, then they don't take it up. But it's not just a like, oh, good golly, I hope I survive letting him out the first 10 feet on the lunge line.
All right. We had a couple compliments too, I got to tell you. Corinna said, I just want to say how much Stacy's advice has helped me with Odin the Mustang. Aww. So we hope that you're having fun with Odin. And Kathleen said, maybe 6 years ago, my horse was in a demo stall at Equine Affair, and I could see Stacy teaching in the ring, her horse could. He watched her so intently, like, please don't pet me right now because you're blocking my view of Stacy. This is when I started paying attention to Stacy. The picture of my horse watching her came up as a memory the other day.
That's
Dad, the horses even like to watch you. Or they're terrified. I'm not sure which. But
when we built our new place, all the stalls look into the arena. And then right now at this time of the year, I put up a small round pen between the stalls in the end. And so I've got like a full dressage size arena, but then at the end of that, there's like a little round pen between the stalls. And the horses sit and watch us. It's really funny. Like, so, like, we're, yeah,
you
for
think
sure.
Thinking,
it's very
well, that's
funny.
Cool to watch, or not me. Don't pick me.
I think there's all kinds of things going on there. So the other day we had a bunch of obstacles out, and it was really funny because the horses were watching with way more intensity than when we're just loping around doing circles and transitions and stuff. There, the one thing you do have to watch though when you're doing that, with all of this, is you have to watch the ones that are kind of phantom thinking about chasing you. Mm-hmm. So, and what's funny is like, okay, Presto, my rescue horse, again, he is going to be full of stories. I'll tell you that about him. But he's not a confident, like, natural leader, but he also doesn't want, won't accept his place kind of at the bottom. So he's kind of in the middle. And so he's one you have to watch because you'll ride past the round pen. And when he's fine when you're approaching, he's fine when you're beside. But you got to learn to almost like look over your shoulder, because as soon as you go past and you're moving away, he's a little bit like that dog, the cat, you know, attacking the mail coming in, or the dog barking at the mailman. Like the one that's like, they think they're chasing the mailman away every day because really they're not, but they think they are. This is Presto. And he'll like pin his ears, and I'm like, no, you can't, like, but he doesn't do it when you're coming to him. He doesn't do it when you're beside him. He only does it when, like, you're already leaving. And he knows the horse is going to leave. And he's like, see, I drove you away. So then I have to, like, go move him away and be like, you're not allowed to be chasing horses. That's rude. So.
Well, Tracy has a question for you. And this kind of relates to anybody that's owned a fat pony like me. I've had my horse, a retired reiner, for 5.5 years. He is the best, and I'm so lucky to have him. Except for this. My one complaint is that he walks so slow. When I try to get him walk faster, he jogs. I just want to be able to keep up with my friends on the trail. Is it that he just has a slower stride, I'm adding, or that he's just lazy, or should I be able to get him to walk faster pace without him going into a jog? Thank you for your time. And I may or may not relate to this issue with my particular fat pony.
Yeah, it is an interesting thing. Now, one of the more recent ways that I have been exploring this is a couple summers ago, I'd never exercised, you know, until I was in my 30s, I never actively tried to exercise. I was just kind of let life happen. Then I started trying to exercise on purpose. And a couple summers ago, I started going out on the trail, and I really, really want to do everything with horses. So instead of just going out and exercising on the trail, like walking and jogging myself, I decided to take my horse along with me. So I've got my little pony. So she's like 14 hands, and I'm out there doing like a walk jog thing, like couch to 5K kind of a program. with my horse, of course, because everything has to involve a horse, even if I'm going to get ready for running a 5K. And I'm out there and I'm thinking, there is something not right here with the fact that when I walk at full speed, my pony jogs. Like, so it was really interesting not just to observe it from on their back as the rider and be like, well, that's interesting that I'm having trouble getting them to extend the walk. But like even walking on my own feet, leading her, she has the tendency to rather break into that little short jog than walk. And so I started watching it and messing around with it. And instead of slowing myself down and really playing with it, I was like, well, we're going to be doing this day in and day out. So I just kept walking. And when I go to a hotel, I realize I can walk about 4 miles an hour. Like if I really am walking, I can walk close to 4 miles an hour. And this pony was probably breaking to a jog at around 3 miles an hour. I'm thinking, no, seriously, I'm pretty sure you can do what I can do. So I just kept doing it. And she would walk with me. And she would walk, lag back behind, jog to catch up. Walk with me, lag behind, jog to catch back up. And I thought, I wonder what would happen if I did nothing but more of this, walking, leading her. And so instead of trying to make this a training type thing, and this is just one example, I just kept going with her. And it was really interesting because it's actually a lot more transitions for her to walk, jog, walk, jog, walk, jog, than it is to learn to walk that big walk and just walk on. So over time, she learned to walk a bigger walk just with me leading her like that. She opened up to like, and again, this is the one when I was answering earlier with Rad, I was saying, you know, like that this horse is the one that tends to be more tight, more reserved naturally. So I thought it was interesting that I could actually see a change in her gait in groundwork only. But the same thing goes when you're on their back. But what you have to, I think it's more complicated on their back. It's a good thing to observe on the ground and mess with, because you're basically playing with your own mental thoughts about it. But on their back, the challenge comes. I typically see this being an issue with how the downward transition is ridden. So if you think about it, the horse is walking, it breaks into the jog. Most typical way people will bring the horse down from the jog to the walk is with rein pressure only and nothing going on with the legs. And what tends to happen is that they come down to the jog, from the jog to the walk, but you don't really have a way to have them come down and go into a big engaged walk. So the way that you do that is that as you go to bring them down from the jog, so let's just use numbers with the hands and legs. So if there's zero on the, say you're out on a trail and people want like zero, zero, they want to just kind of put the horse on walk and be on like cruise control. Well, if they're on cruise control and they're walking, then what they do is the horse breaks into the jog. And then they take hold with their reins and they pull with one or two. Mm-hmm. And what they don't do is they do nothing with their legs, because the horse comes down and then they let go and the horse goes right back up. What I'm saying is when you come down, so pick up with a one or a one and a half with your hands, but also close your legs. So maybe you think of it like we're walking and the horse breaks into the jog. When I go to correct the jog, I'm going to close hands and legs. So now there's one and one. Mm-hmm. And then I need to get the horse to slow down. So maybe the hands are a one and the legs are a half. So there's an imbalance there. It's not like your hands are 10, but you've got to close all the doors, but there's got to be a slight imbalance to where there's a little more brake and a little less gas pedal. And this all depends on what the horse is. But what happens is it gives you more control of being able to say, bring yourself down into this lower gait, but not to like a dumping yourself on the front end, kind of a slowdown, which tends to happen when you do brakes only. Mm-hmm. We need that engaged hind end, and that's going to come from that slight gas pedal and that slight. So this is actually like collection that we're describing, because that collection is going to help bring that hind leg underneath instead of them just kind of dumping down their front end, staying tight. And you can start playing with the idea of stepping them down into the first step of walk and then actually almost keeping the pressure on hand, a little bit of pressure on the hands and the legs, so that you could say, okay, good job coming down. And I want you to take a step forward into a slightly bigger walk.
Hmm.
Did I describe that at all well?
You did, actually, and it applies to carriage horses, too. It's the same thing. Now,
tell me how you achieve this without legs with a carriage horse.
Well, it's hard, and I'm not an instructor, so I probably can't tell you, but that is one of the hard things when doing that transition down, because now they have the carriage pushing them.
Yes.
So you have that as well. So it's almost more important that they learn to engage the hind end when that's happening, because then you won't have that surge, that going over the handlebars thing, right? Mm-hmm. Which you get when you're riding or driving. So replacing that leg is a little bit tougher, but you do have the same sensation when you're driving. It's the same thing.
I totally believe it. And actually, that's kind of interesting that you say that you have the cart kind of pushing on them a little bit. This brings up two thoughts. I, even though I've driven, I wasn't really thinking about how that could also be interpreted by the horse. I was aware that it was happening, but I wasn't really thinking. So now I'm going to get to ponder that. But this brings up freestyle reining at the Quarter Horse Congress last October.
Okay.
Gonna have to find a link and send it to you. There was a lady that did a freestyle reining, and she brought in a miniature Amish buggy pulled by a small pony, and was having the pony's been in several freestyles with her in doing different things, so the pony already knows how to spin and slide. But they would get the pony cantering with this little Amish buggy, and then they would say whoa, and the pony would slide like three times longer than it would have without the buggy, because the buggy was kind of helping push the pony through the slide.
That's funny.
You need to see this. Like, I've got to find, I got to see if they have this somewhere on there, because it was like, I kind of couldn't believe what I was seeing at first. And like I said, the pony was already, it had sliders on. Like, the pony had sliding shoes on. And the pony had been in several prior freestyles with like a rider on it and was sliding. So the pony knew how to slide, but they combined the sliding aspect of reining and the sliding ability of this pony with this little miniature Amish buggy. you need to see this. Sorry.
Well, one of the things I would say, getting back to that question, is, you know, and Jennifer's constantly harping on me about this, getting my pony to walk faster at a walk instead of breaking into the trot, which is much easier for them, is constantly with a carriage pony. And I wonder why riders don't do this more, actually. We talk to them all the time. So we're constantly talking to them. You know, walk on, walk on, walk on. We're giving them voice cues that they know what they mean, because we've done them over and over and over again. So we're constantly talking to them. So if you ever see a carriage driver, especially in competition, going through obstacles and stuff, they're talking to those horses the whole time. And the horses are listening. And I always wondered, and it's so funny, because when we get riders that then do carriages, they go, wow, I've never talked this much. Yet the horse is listening and looking for that confidence and you know, that structure there, that they get by talking. You do it with your legs. You know, you have the advantage of having legs. We have to use voice because we don't have legs. And now we have the whip, and we just touch them with it, and, you know, that can mean certain things too. But it is interesting that we do talk more and half halt more, you know. So if I want to bring them down better, we have to half halt more so that they don't come to a sliding stop.
So that makes sense. And, you know, that's interesting, because in the talking to them thing, and I think some of it goes depending on like what discipline you're showing in. Because exactly. So in the dressage, I'm not allowed any voice cues. Well, trying to break my habit of kiss to lope was kind of comical to watch. But what's interesting is that when I was working last summer on canter walk canter transitions, I realized kind of what you were just saying there. I was like, you know what would help this horse a lot? Because this is very similar, like canter walk versus canter trot versus canter halt. This is like this. We're talking fairly similar stuff here. And I added a voice cue for my canter walk, because I knew that once she got that voice cue down, that transition would become more relaxed and smoother. And then taking that cue away later would just make it a smoother transition for her rather than just cold turkey going with it. So I think there are places where, because I use, even though I don't use as many verbal words as you do, I use different, like, you know, cluck and kiss and different combinations. It's amazing that you can teach a horse different combinations of kisses mean different things. Mm-hmm. And so I use different combinations like that because I can see the benefit, but I've never been fully encouraged to talk as much. Now I'm curious, but oh my goodness.
But like, what you did there was you took basically how your horse learned. You took how your horse learned, because we all learn differently, right? Horses and people mm-hmm. all have different ways of learning. You just said, hey, look, this horse learns a little different. I'm going to use this to teach him at first. Yeah, I have to take it away eventually just because I have to. But you really went to where the horse was and said, okay, mm-hmm. I'm going to teach you in the way you're most comfortable learning. And then yeah. we can adjust later. Once you've learned it, then the horse can start to go, okay, every time she says this word, she also does this with her legs, right? Mm-hmm. And can yes. kind of put those together. Yep. So that's very interesting and very cool. But now we have to hear, speaking about learning things, let's hear a little about Equithrive. And then we're coming on with Jenny from Collaboration Partners, as we do every month, to have very intellectual conversations.
Choosing the right supplements for your horses can often feel like a chore. And you got enough of those. So think Equithrive when it comes to the health and performance of your equine athletes. From clinically proven joint support to essential performance nutrition, Equithrive products are developed with care, backed by science, and ready to go to work for you. So stop wasting your time and your money on unproven products. Equithrive has you covered. Visit Equithrive.com today.
All right, Jenny is ready.
Hi, Jenny. How are you?
I'm ready.
You are ready.
Hey, good morning, you guys.
Good morning.
Happy New Year.
Good morning and Happy New Year. And I didn't yeah. really introduce you in case somebody didn't catch one of our previous previous conversations, but this is my good friend Jenny Taligo, and she is from the Collaboration Partners. And what is the short version of how do I say? Because I just say, like, you do awesome things teaching people about, like, leadership with horses. But do you have a different version of that?
No, I mean, that really is it. No, I think it's just, you know, I partner with horses to help leaders develop the ability to find solutions in uncertainty. And that's pretty much it.
Thinking outside the box. That's that when I watch
trying
it,
to I'm get like, in the box.
Yeah. Okay. That was funny. I didn't even think about that. The fact that you're trying to get a group of people to put a horse in a box to think outside the box. We've got something going on there. Yeah. But you know, what I wanted to do today, and Glenn, I'm kind of curious too, was it's the beginning of the year and there's that temptation for, I'm going to throw out three words. I'm going to throw out New Year's resolution, goals, and failing, as this is kind of the topic of ideas. Because I'm curious, do you guys do New Year's resolutions? Do you do them, Jenny?
I don't set like specific resolutions, like, you know, I'm going to do this or that. But what I have started to get more specific, you know, around the goals that I set for myself. So instead of saying, oh, I want to make more money this year, you know, I start looking at like, okay, well, you know, I want to do this many workshops. I want to work with this many people. And, but more than anything, the goals that I set for myself are more around, you know, how can I help people be less stressed? Like, that's really at the heart of a lot of what I do. And that's what I tell people in my leadership workshops is I want them to be less stressed in their work so that they can enjoy the rest of their lives. Like, go spend time with their horses.
Mm-hmm. What about you, Glenn?
I know you listened to the beginning of Monday's show where Jamie and I were talking about resolutions, the fact that we don't do them. And we've been saying that for 10 years. You know, I think part of the reason, too, is we do set goals. I mean, obviously, if you're in business, you should be setting goals of some sort. And Jenny, you just talked about that. I mean, you've defined what some of your goals are for your business, and you can break that. Obviously, the business gurus tell you to break those down and then make them more manageable and do all of that, right. Which I have never right. been really good at doing because my ADD kicks in the middle of that process and I'm on to the next thing. So, but one of the things that Jamie and I have talked about on the show over the years is there are people that are so goal-driven and so resolution-driven, and what they mm-hmm. tend to be is the people, and Jenny, I'd love to hear your opinion on this, they tend to be the people who don't enjoy today because they're always looking at tomorrow and they just never live in the moment. So, you know, I think that you can go both directions with this where you're so living in the moment and you don't care about tomorrow. But there's also those people that are so driven that they never live in the moment. And then 30 years later, they're looking back and going, I don't even remember what happened because I didn't enjoy any of it. You must find those people too in your workshops.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. And the thing that came to my head immediately, Glenn, as you were, as you were describing that is, you know, when people go out with the horses to, work on the stuff that I do, they're very task oriented and that's a good thing for most people, right? And in most circumstances, I mean, we need to be driven. We need to be task driven, especially in our work. You know, we need to get things done in order to, you know, make money and have the business grow. But unfortunately, you can get so focused on the task that you do lose sight of what's happening right now in this moment and how is that impacting me and the people around me. And, you know, I think the biggest aha that I see people have is, you know, the horses force you to be in the moment. And once people do that, they're able to kind of stop and look at the goal and say, okay, this is the goal, but what's happening in this process of me trying to get to that goal? And you know, when Stacy and I were talking about kind of what we wanted to chit chat about today, and that came to my mind of, you know, we set goals for ourselves, let's say, you know, the New Year's resolution kind of thing, and we get real focused on getting to that place. But we don't pay attention to what's happening in the process of getting there. And that really is where the learning takes place. And I think that happens with our own goals.
Well, or, you know, and it can be where the fun and enjoyment takes place. Let's, right?
It is. Yeah, absolutely. Yes.
Yeah, and I think it's really interesting because this kind of ties back together with what I was trying to express when I was answering Rad's question at the very beginning of the show, which is if we use the words like you were just saying, like the task oriented, so often when we go out with the horses, we're really task oriented with what we want to do. And it gives us this impression of like coming after the horse. And then the horse feels this very like this direct kind of pressure like that. Where it's kind of interesting because when you do like the going up and scratching the horse and rewarding them, but not just like a little bit, but like being like really big and animated with the scratching and all this stuff, there's an energy level there. But the emotion is actually what I'm after in that. Cause I have all my clinics when I have somebody and I go like, okay, you've got this really stoic horse that wants to keep your arms. Like, I want you to scratch your horse until he makes a face, like until he starts wiggling his lip or doing something. And on some of these really stoic horses, they're like, what? And they feel like, well, you're what are you doing to my body? Like, and so it takes them a while to really break that loose. But what's funny is that while they're trying, now this is a different task, you can still look at it like a task, but it's so focused on the emotions that are happening that people naturally, it's like if I said, you know, I'll give you $10,000 if you can get Glenn to smile. You probably wouldn't be yelling at him. Like you'd be smiling. You'd be doing something to try to bring that out, and you'd be mimicking that. And so,
right.
So I think it's interesting.
I like
because
that analogy, actually. No, I do. Because, I think that makes sense. Yeah.
Yeah, and I don't know if I expressed it well, so I hope he's still listening, because it's like it makes you really have to get into it, and then that horse, and now we're talking about the emotions that are underneath there.
But
because I think you're dead
well,
on.
And I think too what comes from that then too, right, is the physiological piece of it. I mean, I think probably most of us can attest to what you feel and how your body reacts, like when you start scratching your horse and they start making that face and the nose is twitching and they're kind of stretching their neck out, you know, and stuff. And we have a physiological response to that because all of a sudden we feel good about, like, we're enjoying watching our horse be happy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, and we shift into into a relational type of interaction as opposed to a task-oriented mindset.
Mm-hmm. Now, it's kind of interesting. Go ahead, Glenn.
I was just going to say real quick, you know, ties directly into this, is society today. And if you take a look at, you know, we're talking about how we're always looking at tomorrow and we're always just constantly looking at tomorrow and not enjoying today. Take a look at anybody at any tourist spot with their phones out. Are they really enjoying, or are they just trying to get the pictures, right? And they're all just trying to get the pictures. Right. And, you know, we've come to the point where Jennifer and I now, when we travel, we only take pictures when we're in it. And, you know, we don't take pictures of the scenery anymore because, to be honest, I can go on Google and 1,000 photographers have taken that same picture much better than I can. You know, when you think about it. And then the other thing is you never look at them again, period. I mean, maybe. Look at them.
That is a true story.
But we're not living in the moment there either. We're always looking like, I'm going to save this for the future, but that future day never comes when you do go back and take a look at them. I when you were talking about that, I was going, well, that society today has kind of had that ingrained in us.
Yeah, and I think the thought that I have that goes right along with that is I think society, I think the reason that goal setting gets a bad rap is because of society's idea of winning and losing. And I think that I'm a firm believer in goal setting, but I'm also a huge believer in failing well and failing forward. Best book title ever, by the way, John Maxwell, Failing Forward. But the idea, I think, like what you're onto there, Glenn, too, is like, it's like if society tells us that failing means we are a failure, then who the heck would want to set a goal? But if you can change your thinking to setting goals is a great way to learn what works. And when I learn that something doesn't work, I can discover why, and then I can figure out that next step. But when you look at it and you say, I'm going to exercise 5 days a week this year, and then you hit week three and you don't exercise 5 days a week and you label yourself a failure, we have a problem because you're not learning by that label. You're slapping that label on. There's so it's like, what was this a decision you made? Like, what was holding you back there? Because I am shocked at how well the theory of exercise dovetails with working our horses. And I think that's because it's almost impossible to work your horse without a version of exercise happening for both of you. It's like you can go to coffee with a friend. You can go to coffee with a friend and have virtually no exercise happen. But most things, aside from like...
I know you two totally, have coffee a lot, so...
We have coffee a lot. Like, not much exercise happens there. Like, and you can do
we
that...
We have mental exercise, mental exercise.
How many calories does that burn? but there's something going on there with how you treat yourself when you set a goal. So if you decide to exercise, you don't do it, and you beat yourself up for it, it's much more interesting to go back and be like, why did that not work? Am I thinking exercise is hard, so I'm making it hard? Glenn, this goes to me. When I think about exercise, I only think exercise is exercise if it's hard a lot of times. I've been working on
that. You have to push it's not exercise. Right.
Exactly. So I've been walking every day with my horse in my indoor. And it is a fascinating thing to just go walk for 30 minutes and listen to all the things my brain says about how this doesn't really count. Why are you doing this? It's only walking. This isn't really enough. And there's like, and I'll tell you that me walking with my horse, if I try to walk alone, it's 10 times harder than walking with my horse, because walking with my horse, I can be like, well, at least I'm doing something with my horse. I must get points for this somewhere.
Right.
where it's like, if it's only me, it is not enough points. And it's like, there's something there. Those are the things when you set a goal and you're even running up against failure, you can learn more through those. And that's, I think.
Well, yeah, if you set the goal, failing forward, if you set the goal to exercise 5 days a week, and then after 6 months, you see you're only doing it 2 days a week, you're still better off than when you were doing no days a week.
Yeah. Yeah. And if you can, and if you can investigate what's going on there for your thought, like for me, it's like to make time, I have to give up some TV show that I might want to watch. But it's just like being honest about like, do I not have enough time, or am I choosing to watch Netflix?
Or Jenny, do you agree that sometimes we all think we can do more than we actually can, whether it's time or whatever the indicators are there. We all overthink what we can do. So that 5 days a week goal may have been unrealistic in the first place. You know, mm-hmm. do you see that right. too, where people are setting unrealistic goals? You know, some people thrive on that. And then when they get 50% there, they're still 50% ahead of where they were, and that makes them happy. But.
Right. Yeah. I mean, I think there's a couple pieces there. The first thing is what Stacey's talking about are, you know, what are your belief systems around exercise? You know, I mean, like Stacey's saying, you know, for her, if it's not hard, then it's not exercise. And so that's how she judges her performance in achieving, you know, any goals on exercise. And it is interesting. I think this is part of why some people can set a goal, a realistic goal, or even something that might seem unrealistic to other people, setting one of those big, hairy, audacious goals. Right. And that even if they only get part way, they see it as success. Whereas other people, they have a belief system around, if I don't accomplish this, then it reflects poorly on me, right? Like, I mean, even in my work, if the goal is to get the horse to walk into the box, you know, without touching them, and somebody is really has a belief system around, if they don't get that horse in the box, it means they are a failure. I loved, Stacey, what you said about failing doesn't mean you're a failure.
Mm-hmm.
And that to me is really huge in goal setting. And I hope people will think about that as they're kind of starting to think about their year, you know, what things they want to accomplish with their horses or whether it's in their careers, that just because you don't achieve specifically what you set for yourself right in this moment, it doesn't mean that you as a human being are a failure.
Mm-hmm. And
I think that's huge.
It is. And what's interesting is I noticed that people are much more forgiving of their horses typically than they are of themselves.
Yeah. Yeah.
And you know, most people aren't like, and this one's a failure now. Like they don't come to a clinic and they go like, they'll be like, oh, I'm having problems with trailer loading. I'm having problems with, and they'll declare their challenges, their goals, their problems with their horse. But very, very, it's very, very rare for them to just be like ready to throw the horse out. It's like, it's more like, they're like, what's going on? If, you know, they don't just declare the horse a failure. But it's interesting that same person will declare themselves a failure when it can just be like, this is the learning process at work. Like, you're learning what works and what doesn't work. And it is an interesting, and that's why I think I enjoy so much talking about the limiting beliefs, because they're doing something different when they're believing it's okay for the horse to make mistakes and than they are when mm-hmm. they're making mistakes and they're switching belief systems. And that's what I enjoy talking about with you.
And I will throw this out there too. And I, you know, I don't know whether Jenny, whether you agree with this, I taught sales for a lot of years. And so we talked about goals a lot.
Mm-hmm.
It's funny, Stacey, you say that because that's human nature. A salesperson would be always more empathetic to somebody else who failed than they were themselves. Right. Mm-hmm. So that's right. just the way our empathy genes work. And it applies to animals as well. So, but writing them down, boy, if you don't write them down, it's not a goal. And, mm-hmm. you know, I never believed that until I taught sales. And then I realized, you know what? The only time I ever really achieved the goals to 100% were when I wrote them down and posted them. And, you know, it sounds corny and it sounds cliche, but oh my God, it's true.
Yeah, no, I agree. I mean, I think that's part of why, like, when I do a workshop, the very first thing we do at the beginning of that is everybody shares what their goal is for the day. Mm-hmm. And then those get posted up on the flip chart, because I'm still old school out in the barn in the pasture, you know, I'm still using a flip chart on an easel pad. And we write those things down. We write those goals down. Because first of all, it gets people really thinking about what is it that you would like to achieve today in your journey, you know, as a leader, or if you're working in some team development or whatever that is. And I have several different kinds of questions that I ask people to get them thinking, not just, well, what's your goal for today? Because a lot of people don't really know, because they don't know what they're getting into at that point yet with the horses. But we capture those. And then at the end of the workshop, whether it's a half day or a full day, when we do our kind of end of the day discussion and debrief, we go back to that board and we go through, every single person goes through, and I say, okay, this was your goal at the beginning of the day. How'd we do? And we either make a check mark, we make a check mark plus, or we might make a check mark minus if it's something, you know, they still have some work to do or whatever. And but by putting it out there, one of the sayings that I heard early on when I started doing this work, and I love it because it reflects on why it's important to get people to write down what they what their reflections are when they do any type of development work. And that is, if you say it, you write it, and you own it. And Glenn, that's what I think, you know, what you're talking yep. about, right? Yep. You speak your goal. This is my goal. You write it down. And because once you write it, once it's in writing, you have ownership of it at that point in time. And then you have the ownership of what happens with that. And so I definitely am a fan of that. And I've started doing that as well. You know, I start writing down my goals for like that I have for the year, and then breaking them down of what do I want to accomplish this first quarter and the second quarter and such and such. And that it gives me something to remind me too periodically of going back and going, why am I doing this?
Right. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, and it also allows you to adjust, that you realize, okay, I was over ambitious with this particular goal. It allows you to adjust that right. to a reachable point. And I want to throw it out here right now. I am setting a goal that before we get together next month, I am going to be the exact opposite of everybody else who says they want to eat less. I am vowing to eat more because we're going on the Horse Lovers Cruise here in a couple Ooh. Of weeks. And I am vowing to eat more than all of you. So I am, that's a goal I have, and I'm putting it out there right now.
I am so excited. I'm excited to hear the results of this goal.
I will give you descriptions of everything I eat all day.
Can I encourage you to take photos? You can be in them. Like, you can have your mouth full, you know, but we need to see photos.
The biggest mistake cruisers make is one, they get it all wrong. And Jenny, have you been on a cruise? Jenny?
No, I have not been on a cruise.
See, the biggest mistake, because you can get all the food you want all day, and the biggest mistake that cruisers right. make is they don't eat the week before thinking they're going to eat a lot. No, you need to expand your stomach. You need to get it ready. So you need to prepare and practice just like everything else. So then when you go on the cruise, your stomach is ready. But the biggest mistake they make is you go to this formal dining room and you have these wonderful dinners every night that you would never order at, you would never go to that level of restaurant every night at home because it costs you too much.
Yeah.
But what people right. don't know and don't do is whatever's on the menu, you can order two or three entrees. You don't have to order one thing. You can order whatever you want.
Yeah.
So we always have, I always order two entrees in case I don't like one, you know. So I order two entrees, and then the servers get to know you and they know I like chocolate. So they'll bring me every chocolate dessert they have on the menu that night. The one night they came out with five desserts. I never even asked for them and set them in front of me. So that is the goal. That's what you want to achieve when you're on a cruise. Just saying.
I like it. I'm all about that. We did an all-inclusive resort one time that was kind of similar to that. You know, you could just go at wherever. You know, you go to any of the restaurants and at any point in time during the day, and you could just go get whatever you wanted to eat. You could go to the really nice restaurant for dinner, or you could go to the buffet. And it was so wonderful because you didn't have to worry about, oh my gosh, I'd really like to get that filet mignon. But I thought, you know, you're like, get the filet mignon.
That's right.
And
that's
the dessert right. and this and that. And so,
talk about living in the moment.
I like
there
the
you
idea,
go.
Glenn, of prepping for, you know, prepping for it.
Well, I didn't even know I was prepping. And we went to the Olive Garden the other day. And I'm like, I just want a huge thing of that Alfredo sauce and as many breadsticks as I can fit inside of myself with the Alfredo sauce.
The breadsticks are really good.
This is my goal. I didn't know I was preparing.
Well, guys, that's it. That's all we have time for today. I'm going to end on eating ourselves Love into it. Oblivion.
I like it. I think that's a great goal.
Jenny, where can people find you? What's your website?
Oh, you can come on out to the collaborationpartners.com and check out what I do. And I'm working on getting some new stuff up on my website. So, and feel free to connect with me on Facebook or on LinkedIn.
Well, now all of these people that work at real jobs, you know, not horsey jobs, but real jobs, and are in the workplace, they always want to get horses into their workplace a little bit. And nobody wants to hear it. Well, if you work at a place that does these kind of training events or, you know, you can talk to your boss about going to Jenny's, and don't tell him it's horses. Just, you know, leave that part out. But it, you know, it's an educational experience for everybody, and it's team building and all of that. And then you get to play with horses while you're with your people from work.
And Glenn, get this.
It is.
We are teaming up, and Jenny and I are doing 3 workshops here in Ohio this summer. We're doing one in April, we're doing one in July, and we're doing one in October together.
Is this for business people? Who's this for?
Yes.
This is actually, and this is for horse people kind of in general. Yeah, it's like they've each got subtly different themes, but you can find information on those over at stacywestfall.com. But they're on like goal setting and leadership and different themes along the way. Yep,
that's
communication,
very cool.
All kinds of stuff. So,
well, Jenny, I always love our chats. Yeah. Thank you for joining us. We really appreciate it.
Yeah, thanks too. I love chatting with you guys. So enjoy the rest of your show.
All right. Thanks, Jenny.
Thank you.
Okay, bye.
Well, that's about all we have time for today. We want to thank our title sponsors, Equithrive, for being part of the show. We certainly appreciate it. I know they have goals, and one of them is to sell more product, and that's why they're here. And I know you use the product, so it is something, you know, one of the things that we always stress on this show is that when we have sponsors, and we're going to the trade show, we're going to WESA the end of this week out in Denver.
Oh, me too.
Are you?
I am.
Oh, well, we have to get together. So we're going to be at WESA. And one of the things we always stress is that we don't endorse products on these shows that we don't use and we don't believe in.
Exactly.
We test them and we've turned down many products. So you know that with Equithrive, it's something that Stacey believes in. It's something that she has used. It's something that works. So we, you know, we don't. And I know you're very particular that way, too.
Very picky.
Yep.
So very, very picky.
Thank you, Stacey. Where can people find your products? Speaking of which, we hardly ever talk about it, but you have a ton of CDs and educational stuff on your website.
I do have stuff, and I even have stuff I'm working on that I can share with you next time. But stacywestfall.com, it has the information on the workshops that I'll be doing with Jenny, which are they're horseless workshops, so you can travel without your horse. But we'll be using my horses and her minis. Did you know she has a herd of minis?
I didn't
know. She has
that.
A small herd of minis.
Oh,
yes,
that's cool.
So the minis will be here. My horses will be here. We'll do some work in the barn and we'll do some work in the classroom type setting. And we'll do both of those informations over there on my website, stacywestfall.com. You can find links to my podcasts over there and all the stuff that's going on and the different products that I use like Equithrive.
And if you're a Stacey fan and you kind of like what we're doing here, we also do this 5 days a week. Horses in the Morning has been around for 10 years. We're one of the longest running daily podcasts in the world. I think we're in the top 6 now because we've been around
Congratulations.
For 2,350 episodes. So you can find us here every day. Just search for Horses in the Morning in your podcast player and subscribe there. It's Tuesdays and Thursdays. We have different episodes every week and every month that come back and we do different things. And then Monday, Wednesday, and Friday, my co-host Jamie and I have been here for 10 years, have a little fun, and it's very entertaining, and I think you'll enjoy that as well. She's a Monty Roberts certified instructor, so she's also a instructor as well. You can find past episodes of this at horsesinthemorning.com. Scroll down to the middle of the page. You'll see Stacy's banner. Click on it, and it'll bring up all the past episodes that Stacy has been on. That's it for today. We'll be back tomorrow with Jamie for a Wednesday episode here, and I guess we'll see you later in the week in Denver.
That's right. We'll see you out there.
Hey, that's very cool. All right, everybody. Have a great day.